You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Baseball activity took a backseat this past week in Boston with the stunning announcement that Red Sox manager John Farrell has been diagnosed with lymphoma. Welcome to MLB.com Extras Boston Red Sox. Matt Wehmeyer joined by MLB.com Red Sox reporter Ian Brown. Ian, thanks for your time as always, and of course, a very tough week for the Red Sox and the Red Sox organization, and in particular, John Farrell, obviously. Give us your personal reaction to the news about John, and also share some of the reactions that you've had from people that you've spoken with in the Red Sox organization.
Yeah, no, I was like everybody else. I was stunned. I mean, there was no inkling that anything was wrong with John. John didn't know anything was wrong with him except for the hernia that he developed in New York when he threw his equipment back down. And that's the kind of thing that causes a hernia when you have a strong rotational movement like that. And then he went in, none of us even knew he was having that surgery. And then he went in for that. And during the course of that surgery, they found, something. They found that he had some lymphoma, so they had to take it out. So, John was very emotional when he spoke to the media about it last Friday, and we were all just kind of, it just shows you never take anything for granted. But fortunately, they did catch this very early, and it sounds like John's long-term prognosis is very good, and he just kind of has to take care of him now and get this thing taken care of.
And Ian, when the news first came out, we heard accounts of many Red Sox players obviously being very emotional about the news about their manager. David Ortiz in particular said that he received the news from Hanley Ramirez, who was in tears. We saw Dustin Pedroia during his individual press conference. He was very emotional. This was just so stunning to hear for so many players who've been with John Farrell in many capacities, not only having him as their manager, but in some cases as a pitching coach back during the 07-08 era when they won the World Series in 07. Just talk about some of the player reactions that you've had from players like Ortiz and Pedroia.
Yeah, I think, when you see John Farrell, you see such kind of a strong figure, just somebody who's just like so together, just built really tough, and you just don't expect a guy like that to really get struck down by anything. He just always, he sounds so good and he looks so good. He's a kind of an authoritative figure. So I think that was the big surprise here, is that somebody like John, like anybody can get cancer in any second. And this is kind of a reminder of that. And, David Ortiz and Dustin Pedroia, I thought it was very poignant and touching that they came to his press conference and stood there in support of their manager while he talked. And those guys have both been around John a long time. They're both very fond of him. And, it's kind of neat to see that. But, yeah, this one's been tough for a lot of people around the Red Sox.
And one of those people includes Terry Francona. The two of them go way back, played together with the Indians in the late 80s. And then, of course, John Farrell, Tito's pitching coach, again, in 07 when they won the World Series. And they've had a long-lasting relationship now for many decades. And we heard the news today that Francona is going to be accompanying John Farrell tomorrow, I believe, for his first chemo treatment. And I know that Terry Francona will always be held in very high regard by Red Sox Nation. And as if we needed one more reason to admire and revere Terry Francona, he gave us another. And I think this is tremendous news that, we see just how tight and how strong this bond is between the two of them.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't get goosebumps hearing that Terry Francona heard about John Farrell's cancer, talked to him right on the phone and said, when is your first chemotherapy treatment? And he said Tuesday, when Francona says, I'll be there. Now, if that doesn't give you goosebumps, I don't know what will. Because, I don't see a lot of, people who would be that forthcoming and giving of themselves to just say, look, I'm going to go to this treatment with you. We're managers on two different teams, but, we're friends for life. They won a World Series together, and they've just always had a really close relationship. And I think it says a lot about Terry. That he would do that and be there for John kind of in this way on a game day. Obviously, it's going to be a tough thing to watch his friend go through that, and just can't say enough about the gesture from Terry. And I think it's kind of cool to see such a close relationship that kind of really extends, obviously well beyond baseball.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think when Terry hands out the lineup card, you know, minutes away as we're speaking on a Monday night. I think the ovation he's going to receive is going to be just some kind of thunderous from the Fenway faithful tonight. And like you said, if you don't get goosebumps about a story like that, you know, check your pulse. You know, Ian, I'm hesitant to ever make a correlation between what is obviously a personal health crisis for John Farrell and a team's performance. But having said that, I have to think on some level, the Red Sox had their manager very much on their minds this past weekend. In the two games following John Farrell's announcement, they go out and they absolutely destroy the Mariners, put up 37 combined runs in the first two games. And again, I got to think that to some degree, on some level, there had to be a correlation there.
Yeah, no, I think that what happens is that we all get so caught up in baseball, and players get so much caught up in baseball, and they put pressure on themselves, especially when you're having a season like the Red Sox are. And then, you know, then you hear about something like this with John Farrell, and it kind of alleviates the pressure of baseball. You say, this is baseball. This isn't life and death. So I think guys go out there, they feel freer out there. They feel, you know, just less stress on them, and they're not thinking so much about it. They're just, you know, trusting their talent. And I think that's what happened those first two games after John Farrell announced he had his news. And even Sunday, the Red Sox lost Sunday, but they came back from 7-0, tied it up. So, yeah, I just think that it kind of just changes your perspective. I think it has had a little bit of an effect on the Red Sox here the last couple of days.
And I think Torey Lovello, the acting manager for the remainder of the season, said it best after Friday night's victory when they scored 15 runs. He said simply, this one was for John. And I think everybody knew it. Everybody believed it. And it was a great, you know, on-field tribute to their manager after this stunning announcement. You know, 15 runs Friday, 22 on Saturday. Before we kind of break that down, and especially the performance of Jackie Bradley Jr., give us your thoughts on Torey Lovello. He's in, I don't want to say a tough position, but he is, again, the acting manager for the remainder of the 2015 season. Is he more of in a caretaker role right now, just kind of keeping the seat warm until, you know, you pray that John Farrell beats this and recovers 100% and comes back next year? But what kind of a position is he in right now as the acting skipper for this team?
You know, I think this is a great opportunity for Torey Lovello, just because this is a guy who's been on the doorstep of managing for a few years now, and he's finished second, Matt, in quite a number of job interviews over the years. And then there's that whole weird thing with the Cubs where I think the Cubs, you know, really wanted to hire him, but they couldn't because of some clause in the contract that Theo Epstein left, that he was only allowed to hire so many guys from the Red Sox. But, you know, I think this guy could be a really good manager. Paul Molitor, he went right up against Paul Molitor in Minnesota and, you know, finished second there. And this guy brings a lot of energy, a lot of preparation. He's learned a lot from guys like John Farrell, from guys like Terry Francona. Now, people forget Torey Lovello played for Sparky Anderson way back when. So this guy has a great baseball upbringing. And now for Torey to get a chance to show, you know, other teams who might be looking for a manager, hey, you know, how he can do as a manager. And this really, this 6-7 weeks here that he's going to get to manage the Red Sox, I think it's really a great experience. As far as, you know, being a caretaker for John, I get the sense that Torey and John are going to work together a lot, you know, the next 2 weeks. Even though John's not going to be in the dugout every night, there's going to be certain times he's worn down from chemotherapy treatments. I think that he will basically still be involved in this team and still be there for support for Torey, still kind of lending his knowledge. So it's a little bit of a unique situation here. But the players in the Red Sox really like and respect Torey. And like I said, I think this is a well-deserved opportunity. I know it's tough for him because, like with Terry Francona, you know, John Farrell and Torey Lovello, that's another great friendship dating back to, I think it was 1993, they were teammates with the Angels. So they also go way back, and they've sort of done things together every step of the way since John came to manage the Red Sox in 2013. But, yeah, I think it'll be the experience can do nothing but help Torey Lovello.
Well, safe to say, Ian, that the first two games for Torey Lovello as the acting skipper for the Red Sox could not have gone much better. 15 runs Friday, 22 on Saturday, the most runs by any team in a game this season. And 22 of the 37 runs, again, came on Saturday thanks in large part to an historic day by a Jackie Bradley Jr., of all players. You know, five extra base hits, two homers, seven RBIs, not even Ted Williams, not Carl Yastrzemski, nobody before Jackie Bradley Jr. had ever had five extra base hits in one game for the Boston Red Sox. Just a stunning performance, and a bulk of that against King Felix Hernandez, so that just says it all right there. What you've observed, what has been the difference about JBJ in recent weeks as opposed to previous stints as a major leaguer?
Yeah, I just think, first of all, Jackie's getting another chance. He didn't really get much of a chance to play for the Red Sox this season, his other call-ups, because he had such a bad year last year that it was hard for him to erase that stigma. The Red Sox were very deep in the outfield, so just getting a chance to get more reps every day. He really made a lot of adjustments in spring training where he shortened up his swing and, you know, he started, you know, got back to the plate discipline that he had earlier in his minor league career. And, I spoke to Chili Davis, the hitting coach, last week, and Chili said that Jackie's work behind the scenes has gotten a lot better. He's gotten a lot more focused on what he's doing. And rather than take 100 swings, take 25 swings that really mean something and 25 swings that are really forming good habits. So I think maybe just the switch to Chili Davis, I think, is really, you know, I think they've clicked for whatever reason. Chili and Jackie have clicked, so I think that has worked out well, too. And, you know, let's face it, Jackie Bradley Jr. plays such great defense that you can't help but root for the guy to hit enough to stay in the lineup because, you know, the Red Sox think that Jackie Bradley is the best defensive outfielder in Major League Baseball. So it's not like this guy needs to be a star hitter to be in the lineup. He just needs to be a competent hitter. I mean, if this guy's hitting 250 or 260, I mean, he's probably a guy that you go with that defense. I mean, last year he hit 198, I think it was. So you just can't go with that. That's just not good. You know, that's just dragging the rest of the lineup down too much. But if he can just be a competent hitter, let alone the explosion he had on Saturday, you know, this guy is a very useful part of a baseball team. So I think watching Jackie Bradley Jr. these last 6-7 weeks here, that's one of the things that I'm most looking forward to for the rest of this Red Sox season, just to kind of see, you know, what they might have here.
Absolutely agree, Ian, and I think it's a shame last year in 2014 that, like you said, he was so breathtakingly good defensively, but he could not hit his weight, and when that happens, it's going to, I think it cost him a gold glove. Do you agree?
I do, yeah, especially because, you know, the big slump he was in, that fourth that tripped down to Pawtucket last season where he was back in the minor leagues for, I think it was about 4 weeks, and right there just losing all those games. And I think, you know, how can we give a gold glove to a guy who's, you know, in the minor leagues and didn't get enough at-bats here? So I absolutely agree, and I think if you put this guy in center field every day for a baseball season, give him 150 games, there's no doubt in my mind that you're going to see a gold glove winner at some point with that combination, that rare combination, Matt, of a glove, speed, and an arm. You know, some guys have 2 out of 3, some guys have 1 out of 3, but, you know, he really has all three, and he's so much fun to watch out there.
And, Ian, that brings me to my next point. You mentioned that, you know, watching him in center field is fun, but the ironic part is we haven't seen him in center field because that's where Mookie Betts has been all season, and he's played very well in center field, of course, getting it done offensively as well. I think most people agree that JBJ's primary defensive value has to come in center field because he is so good. So that creates kind of a fascinating logjam, if you will. You know, does JBJ, if he can hold his weight at the plate, does he eventually end up in center? If so, where does that put Mookie Betts, and what the heck do you do with Hanley Ramirez in the midst of all this?
Yeah, no, you raised several good points here. And look, I think right now, out of respect for Mookie Betts and the season that he's had this year, you're going to keep him in center field because John Farrell is one of those people who is not of the mind that somebody should lose their job because of an injury. And, you know, Mookie had a fluke concussion that ironically was when he made just a spectacular catch into the bullpen that only drops, you know, once he fell on his head in the bullpen. But, yeah, so they'll ride it out with him in center for the rest of the year. And I think going into next year, though, going into a full spring training, if you decide that Jackie Bradley Jr. is going to be in your everyday lineup next year, I think you put him back in center. And the good thing about the Red Sox playing at Fenway Park is they always feel like they need a right fielder who can play right field like a center fielder. And that's what they were thinking when they got J.D. True in 07. That's what they were thinking when they got Shane Victorino in 2013, was they really needed two outfielders in Fenway who play with the ability of a center fielder. So it could only be a good thing to have both those guys. And, oh, by the way, you have Ruse Castillo and the guy you mentioned, Hanley Ramirez. Yeah, where does he fit next year? There's a lot of people to mind who think that you move Hanley to third and then put Pablo across the diamond over at first base, or you make the switch to Hanley Ramirez at first base because it's just too much athleticism in that outfield right now. You know, you think this could be the future of the Red Sox outfield is Bradley, Castillo, and Betts. So it's going to be real interesting to see what direction they go in next year.
Yeah, it is really going to be fascinating. And I've heard some people kind of, you know, guess or theorize that as crazy as this sounds, with him being 9 home runs away from 500, it would be a PR disaster if you got rid of David Ortiz. I know he had the vesting option in his contract with a certain number of plate appearances for the option for 2016. So Big Poppy will be back next year, but is that something that the Red Sox would even consider I mean, is it to a point now where there's literally, you know, too many players for too few spots?
No, I don't think so. Look, with David Ortiz, look, this guy is still an elite hitter. I know he had a slow start to this year, but he's still, you know, he's still performing at such a high level and actually having a better season than Hanley Ramirez. So, you know, Hanley, I just think they're going to have to find a spot for him. They're going to have to find, you know, what does he play? Does he maybe play first base? Or does he play third? Or does he, you know, maybe DH against some lefties next year and get David off his feet at times? But, yeah, David Ortiz, all along, they were going to bring him back next year. He really earned it with the contract, the way it was set up. He really earned that that vesting option. So I think that, you know, they'll figure out how the pieces fit together. These things have a habit of working themselves out.
Yeah, they certainly do. And I want to get your thoughts real quick on Ruznay Castillo. You mentioned him a few minutes ago, and I think, you know, we amidst all the buzz about Jackie Bradley Jr., this is a guy in Castillo that he's come on himself. You know, his first stint with the club this season didn't go so great, sent back down to AAA. Then the team ships off Shane Victorino to the Angels, and now there's a spot for Castillo. And I think that we've really seen his power come to the forefront the past couple games at a very impressive opposite field homer to right center in Fenway, which is no small feat. And I think that we're starting to see that talent kind of come to the forefront, and we're starting to see why the Red Sox gave this guy $72 million, which at one point in time looked like a bad contract, and now not so much, in my opinion.
Yeah, the thing with Ruznay, we're starting to see the natural ability take over, and he's made a lot of exciting plays, whether it's been a triple or whether it's been hitting the ball out of the ballpark or making a play in the outfield. You know, the things he needs to improve now, he just needs to improve his approach a little bit at the plate. He's still kind of swinging at some stuff in the dirt and not putting himself in good hitters' counts. But that's all going to come. He's just gaining more experience. And, yeah, we clearly are seeing that the Red Sox scouts, you know, they definitely saw something in this guy, and there was definitely a reason they signed him to this money. And right now it's looking like it was not a bad read. Some people overreacted to this move at first, you know, after a very short sample of playing time and decided it wasn't a good move. But I think now we're seeing you know, why they signed this guy in the first place. So it's going to be cool to see, you know, what type of player he evolves to. Ironically, Shane Victorino is the guy they kind of compare him to, and the guy where they think, you know, if he develops into what they think he could be, that Victorino type who can do a little bit of everything. I personally think he has a little more power than Victorino, but aside from that, I think they could be pretty similar players.
We're speaking with MLB.com Red Sox reporter Ian Brown on MLB.com Extras. And Ian, as we head down the home stretch, I want to get your thoughts on some of the members of the pitching staff. Rick Porcello sent down to the minors with what many people suspected was a phantom injury, just to get him out of the rotation, out of action for a little bit, because he struggled so bad. Give us an update on him, and also Brian Johnson, too, who made one start, a decent performance, and then got hurt not long after that first career start. What are the updates on both of them?
Yeah, with Porcello, they want to send him on a two-start rehab assignment. So he pitched for Lowell over the weekend and pitched pretty well. And was able to mix in some of his, some of his supplemental pitches a little better. They're going to get him one more time Friday at Pawtucket, and then they expect Porcello to be back in the Red Sox rotation Wednesday of next week against the Chicago White Sox. And you're right. You know, I don't know how serious of an injury that was, but I think you're right. They did need to kind of put the brakes on. As long as he was going to pitch like he was pitching, whether it was an injury or whether, you know, he just needed a mental break, whatever, they needed to shut that down and let him build back his foundation a little bit. So hopefully this helps him out. As far as Brian Johnson, we really haven't gotten much information other than when they first diagnosed the injury. They said there was no structural damage. But anytime you have a young pitcher complain of an elbow injury or elbow soreness, you're going to be very conservative. And I think that the Red Sox are being extremely conservative with Brian Johnson. They view him as perhaps an important piece of the future, so they're not going to rush him. Maybe we'll see him start once or twice before the season ends, just so he can go into the offseason, you know, with a good feeling. But not much new to report yet of late on the Brian Johnson.
And Ian, just to wrap up, your thoughts on the Fenway Park debut on Sunday of Henry Owens. Talk about a mixed bag. He had 10 strikeouts, also gave up 10 hits, only the fourth pitcher all season to do that, and the first in the American League. Which pitcher is he closer to, in your opinion, the 10-strikeout guy or the guy that gave up 10 hits?
It's a loaded question right there, Matt. I haven't seen him pitch enough to know that. I'll tell you this, his debut at Yankee Stadium, pretty impressive poise there for a kid to throw, I think, a 34-pitch first inning, and then he really settled down in that game. that showed me something right there, that he has kind of the mental fortitude to pitch at this level. I think, I think that he's still refining his command a little bit. And that's, you just never know when it's going to click with a young pitcher. Kind of like with Jackie Bradley Jr. on the position player side, you never know when it's going to click with a young hitter either. So I think that he's still evolving, he's still developing. But, the mental stuff, that's a good sign. That even yesterday, when he gives up seven runs, but last six innings and strikes out 10 guys. I mean, to me, for a guy who's not getting down on himself just to give up a bunch of runs, I think there's a lot of encouraging signs when it comes to Henry Owens.
And, Ian, I have to ask this. The guy has size 17 feet. Have you seen this guy's cleats? Are they the ninth wonder of the world here?
I'm going to go examine them tomorrow, maybe take an Instagram photo for you at some point. But, pretty big feet right there. I don't know if they're quite Bob Lanier size for those of you who've been to the Basketball Hall of Fame. But, he's got some big feet.
Yeah, Shaquille O'Neal-esque, if you will. Ian, that puts a bow tie on this one. MLB.com Red Sox reporter Ian Brown, thanks very much for your time. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good, Matt. Thank you.
All right, this is Matt Waymire signing off for MLB.com Extras Boston Red Sox.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.